Welcome to the Helping Children Thrive podcast, where we talk about ways to improve your child's health and recovery. I'm your host, Momina Salim, and I'm a certified pediatric functional medicine health coach. At Helping Children Thrive, it is our aim to educate and empower parents and practitioners with integrative approaches to children's health conditions. Along with this hope that our children can recover, I welcome you all. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the show. I have someone very special on the show today. I'm sure you've all come across her content on either Instagram or Facebook, and she's been everyone's go-to pediatrician when it comes to information about COVID-19 and how to keep her children safe. It's none other than Dr. Elisa Song. Dr. Song is an integrative pediatrician. She's a pediatric functional medicine expert and a mama in a pediatric integrated pediatric practice, whole family wellness. She's helped thousands of children get to the root cause of their health concerns and help their parents understand how to help their children thrive by integrating conventional pediatrics with functional medicine, homeopathy, acupuncture, herbal medicine, and essential oils. Dr. Song has created Healthy Kids, Happy Kids, an online holistic pediatric resource to help practitioners and parents bridge the gap between conventional and integrative pediatrics with an evidence-based, pediatrician-backed approach. Welcome, Dr. Song. I'm so happy to have you on today.
Thanks, Amina. I'm really excited and honored to be here and talk about kids, everything kids.
Yeah, no, that's great. When I introduced you, you're everyone's go-to holistic pediatrician, right? A lot of times when I talk to either practitioners or parents, I really have to explain what that means. So can you just kind of tell us what that is and how you got into just being a holistic pediatrician?
Yeah. So, holistic is such a broad term, and really and truly, all pediatricians should be holistic, right? Because holistic really means taking that child in the context of their family life, their school life, their social life, and, broader perspective, looking at the whole child. So I've initially called myself a holistic pediatrician. I've been moving more towards integrated pediatrician because that really captures what I strive for in my practice and when I educate parents online. So integrative really means, for me, taking the best of both worlds, sort of the conventional pediatric model and the quote alternative medicine model. And it really shouldn't be alternative at all. But we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We know that for conventional medicine, for instance, antibiotics can be life-saving, right? Mm-hmm. And that there is a time and a place for everything. So we want to make sure, yes, there is a time and a place for medications. However, we also want to understand that there are some adverse effects of medications that we can counter. We also want to take a preventive and a thriving mindset and understand there are so many things we can do from an integrative functional medicine standpoint to prevent our kids from developing chronic illnesses in the first place. So when I integrate pediatric care, I'll integrate conventional medicine with also functional medicine, homeopathy, essential oils, herbal medicine, everything that you mentioned. And that way, let's take, for instance, the example of antibiotics. Like I said, antibiotics can be life-saving. However, we know that many, many antibiotics are inappropriately prescribed, right? Antibiotics won't do anything for viral infections. And even some bacterial infections will resolve on their own. One of the unintended consequences that we need to be aware of from an integrative standpoint is the impact of those antibiotics on our children's gut microbiome. And that's the heart of functional pediatrics, is looking at what's going on in the child's developing gut-brain connection, gut immune system connection. And what parents don't realize is when antibiotics kill the bad bugs, they also can kill all the good bugs in your child's gut. Right? Oh. They don't pick and choose. So when we disrupt, when antibiotics disrupt our kids' gut microbiome, that could inadvertently and unknowingly increase their risk of things like anxiety, ADHD, autoimmune illnesses. So yes, we take those antibiotics if they're necessary, We use integrative medicine tools when they're not necessary so that our kids can get better if they have a cold or a flu or whatever, an ear infection. And if they need antibiotics, we use our functional medicine tools to get their gut microbiome back in order. And that's really, you know, the key to thinking about how do we help our kids thrive in this modern world.
Yeah. And, you know, I really like that it's not just black and white, right? You can't be camp conventional or camp, integrative. You have to kind of get both of those together. You have, like, a lot of times we see a lot of conventional medicine doctors push back when you look at, you know, a lot of functional medicine, biomedical ways of dealing with conditions. And that's a bit of a shame, but, like, I think with more and more awareness now, we're starting to change that. So that just kind of brings me to, you know, how you said that the more and more we're using a lot of these antibiotics, for example, we're seeing more incidences of kids with ADHD, right? Yeah. A lot of people talking about increased either diagnoses, that it's because of that we're seeing it, you know, we're capturing more of those kids. There's more awareness about that. Is that really how you're seeing it? Are we seeing more kids in general just have ADHD?
It's so interesting. I mean, that, you know, same thing with autism, right? We can point to, well, are these numbers really reflective of actual diagnoses, or is it that we're better at diagnosing kids and capturing more children? I do believe it's a very real increase. And for parents who, I mean, I probably am a bit older than many of the moms listening right now. I just turned 52, and you know, I remember, of course, growing up in the 70s and going to elementary school. It was a very, very different experience than when I go into my children's classroom to volunteer. And you know, when my kids were in their K-1 class, in their second grade class, it was, what's the right word? I mean, astonishing on some levels, heartbreaking on other levels, to see the number of kids who were just not able to be still in their bodies and their minds, and who clearly were uncomfortable in their own skin. You know, whether they're rolling on the floor or blurting out or you know, fidgeting in other people's spaces. And so we've had this this huge surge really in kids who have attention and focus concerns, whether or not they are ultimately diagnosed with ADHD, kids with behavioral concerns, which go hand in hand with ADD, right? Kids with sensory processing disorders and sensory processing issues, which also goes hand in hand with ADHD. I mean, these are all interconnected. And you know, from a functional medicine standpoint, when a child comes to me, it matters less what their diagnosis is, as you know, and what matters more is what is going on in that child and for that child. You know, where are some of the biochemical imbalances, immune imbalances, brain imbalances, of course, gut imbalances, and you know, socially and psycho-emotionally, what's going on for that child? But I do think it's a very, very real increase. And you know, to your point, when we're talking about antibiotics, you know, we know the power of the gut microbiome in shaping that babies, yeah, you know, and that toddler and that child and that teenager's brain. There's this intimate gut-brain connection. And so, you know, it really does come back to, you know, what are we doing when they're babies? Now, if you have a child who's older right now, don't go back there, right? Don't go back and think, oh my God, what did I do when my kids were a baby? However, we know now when children receive antibiotics in utero, let's say if mom gets a sinus infection or UTI while she's pregnant, or, you know, around the time birth, if babies are born C-section, or moms have B strep, or in those first, you know, key years of life, that disruption to the gut microbiome can significantly increase that child's risk for developing ADHD, anxiety, any number of, you know, what are considered quote mental health symptoms, but it's because of this intimate link between the gut and the brain.
Yeah. And I think that what we see a lot, and I think I talk a lot about that with everyone that I come into contact with, is just about the fact that you might not see that in the first few years. So you might just see that your kid is falling ill a lot when, you know, they're 1, 2, 3 years old, but that is kind of a big alarm bell, that something big is kind of festering inside their body, and that we see presentation of that later in life. So, you know, when they're in their maybe 8, 9, 10, and that's when we see that surge of diagnosis, right? Parents are going to doctors and saying, hey, my kid can't sit in class. The teachers are complaining. A lot of times, like I completely agree. I went into my son's, he's in kindergarten, his class to read a book to them, that there were a bunch of kids that just couldn't keep still. And so at this point, a lot of doctors would say, oh, they're just kids. But like, these are red flags, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, you know, it's as a mom, we really want to trust our mama guts, right? Trust our mom instincts. And if you feel like, you know, in preschool, you know, your kids are having trouble making friends, or having trouble, you know, staying in their own space, you know, and having trouble sitting still in circle time, it's not like we expect toddlers to be able to sit for 20 minutes, you know, fully engaged, but we can notice these signs. And oftentimes, because we don't want there to be a problem, right? And this is, you know, and not just parents, but, you know, because teachers and pediatricians, we want everything to be okay. There's often, you know what, they're just toddlers. Let's just wait and see what happens, you know, in kindergarten. Well, it's just the first year of school. It's a transition, right? You know, or, oh, their baby sister was just born. It's just a phase. And, you know, we chalk it up to, it's just a phase. They're going to outgrow it. They're going to outgrow it. And in the meantime, perhaps, you know, social emotionally and, you know, academically and, you know, behaviorally, things are continuing to get worse until all of a sudden, you know, it's a huge alarm in eighth grade, ninth grade, when they're not able to read well, and when they're not able to sit still, or when they're getting into fights, you know, with their friends. So we want to take those little red flags as, hey, look, this is an opportunity, right? If your child really can't sit still in their body, and, you know, they don't like hugs, or they need really deep pressure, right? Whether they're sensory seeking or sensory averse, right? Figuring out how your child's brain works, figuring out what their nervous system needs, and understanding how to support your kids to be, you know, as healthy and happy as possible, you know, from the moment that they're toddlers or even babies, this is such a great opportunity for us. And so we want to use that as, you know, hey, sure, there's a red flag that something's going on. Let's use that knowledge as power, instead of just trying to brush it under the table and saying, oh, it's a phase, or, oh, it's normal for their age. Right. So I don't look at it as a negative. It's just really, it's an opportunity, but we want to take those opportunities. And, you know, if you have a teacher or a pediatrician who is not really adequately addressing your concerns, then look for some other practitioners too. I'm all for having a team approach. And, you know, for a lot of kids who are ultimately diagnosed with ADHD, they initially present with more sensory issues, you know, like I mentioned. You know, they're just, you know, can't stand loud sounds, or, you know, food textures are a problem, or clothing, right? They have to wear the softest pants, no jeans ever, or shoes have to be, you know, really cramped tight. I mean, these are, as parents listen, a lot of parents would be like, ding, 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 that's my kid, right? Oh my gosh, I have to be careful to only buy the seamless socks, or I know, you know, certain foods are just a no-go because of the textures. So if that's your child, working with an occupational therapist, you know, who is familiar with sensory needs, can help so much for your child to be comfortable in their body and their mind, so that they can sit and attend for longer periods. We take that piece away, and then we see what's left.
Yeah, it's almost like moms are now detectives, right? Looking at what's going on with their kids. And so you mentioned some of the sensory red flags, but what are some, like, salient red flags that moms should really be looking out for when it comes to ADHD?
Yeah, you know, and we really don't diagnose ADHD until kids are older, right? Yeah. Until, you know, maybe second grade or so. But it's not like all of a sudden ADHD pops up, you know, when kids are in elementary school. Mm-hmm. You know, parents will recognize that there's some concerns even early on. So, and there's, different kinds of ADHD. It it can look different in boys and in girls. And so we want to be aware of that. The more obvious red flags that your child might have concerns for ADHD is the hyperactive, impulsive type, because these are the kids who are poking at other kids, who can't stop running, run across the street impulsively, who blurt out and always interrupt, who look like and feel like they're always driven by a motor. They're go, go, go. And they're exhausting for parents. They can be exhausting for teachers. And it can be really challenging to have peer relationships, which as a mom, I mean, that's heartbreaking, right? Yeah, when your child is having trouble with peer relationships. And then it becomes more and more obvious because, a room full of 3 and 4 year olds, there's a lot of behaviors that you can kind of ignore because kids aren't really paying that much attention. But as kids start to mature and your child with ADHD, knowing that their brain just takes a little longer to mature, right? Yeah. So then all of a sudden that brain maturity starts to lag, and third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, the differences get a little bit more distinct. And other kids may not excuse those behaviors as much. Yeah. And so the social relationships can get even more challenging. So that's one kind of, one kind of ADHD. The other kind that's a little harder to diagnose and to detect is the, the inattentive type, because, kids who are, and I don't like to use this word, but the quote troublemakers, right? They're the ones who stick out. They're the ones who are like, Johnny, stop doing this. Or Jamie, can you please keep still? Yeah. Or, Maya, what are you doing? But the kids who are the quiet, the absent professor, the staring off into space, they're the ones that often get missed until later. So we also want to look for that too. Are your kids just kind of spacey? Do you have to repeat their names? Like, Bodhi's my son, Bodhi, and then you tell him something and he walks away and he completely forgets, right? or you ask them to, go to the room to, get their socks because you're going to the park, and they go to the room and 15 minutes later, they're no socks, but they've taken out the Lego box and they're looking at some books and they're, everything's on the floor. And you're like, we were supposed to go 5 minutes ago. Yeah. Right. But that also, is another kind of ADD that may have fewer red flags initially, but we want to watch for that. Right.
Yeah. And show a lot more once they get a little bit older and then they're in school, and that's when they start not really being at that same level as the other kids in their grade, and they struggle.
Yeah. And, I will say, back when I was younger, even I would say, before my kids were born, they're now 12, almost 13 and 11, there was, as I was starting out in pediatrics, this is over 20 years ago now, there was a stigma attached to having, a diagnosis of ADD or anxiety or mental health condition. And, thankfully now there is much less. There may still be some, but much less. And so, if let's say a school teacher is astute or a pediatrician brings up some concerns, we as parents want to, if we ourselves have a stigma, in our minds, we want to recognize that and then remove that and notice, if my child is showing some of these red flags, what can I do to support them? And also, how do I recognize some of the gifts that are present there too, right?
Because
the brain of a child, with ADHD, yes, there are frustrations, but there are some amazing gifts that come along with that. So it's really initially maybe working a lot on our parental mindset too and our parenting mindset.
Yeah. No, I'm so glad you brought that up because I always tell the parents that I work with that, it might be hard right now, but they're some of the greatest minds that are there, right? The way that they problem solve, the way that they look at things, the way that they, if they break things apart and put them back together. Like just the way that they approach things is so different, so creative and so unique that those are gifts, like you mentioned. And it's worth like looking into. But it's really, like you said, changing the way you're approaching this whole idea of you know, there being something that your child needs help with. And I think that is where they can also be lags in diagnoses, the acceptance of parents, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a shift because in, and like I said, I've said from the beginning, right, the diagnosis matters less to me from that integrated functional medicine standpoint. However, you know, is that as a diagnosis something that parents should pursue? Well, we have to think there are definitely some pros and cons with that, right? Yeah. And nowadays where there is less stigma attached to having a diagnosis in terms of, you know, the school system and, you know, just, you know, socially, because, you know, there's so many adults now who are even being diagnosed with ADHD and can now say, oh my gosh, that's why I had such a hard time when I was a kid. And I wish I had known this about my brain, right?
Yeah.
So in terms of, you know, getting a diagnosis, you know, there are some parent-teacher questionnaires or something called the Vanderbilt scale that can be used, or Connors, each has their pros and cons. Pediatricians can help with that. If your kid's in school, then schools can help with an evaluation. In fact, public schools must, if you request an evaluation for what's called an IEP or an individualized education plan, public schools must provide an assessment to see, you know, what are some of the strengths and areas of needs for your child and what services might they qualify for at school. Now and then there are complete neuropsychological evaluations that you can get from an outside neuropsychologist, which I think are amazing because it can really tease apart how your child's brain works. Mm-hmm. However, those can be quite expensive because oftentimes their insurance doesn't cover them, and they can be very time consuming too.
Yeah.
But they can be valuable. Now, that being said, you know, when children have a diagnosis, it often opens up the door for services at school that kids can access if they need or desire. Doesn't mean they have to, but if your kid needs a little extra time, you know, on a reading assignment, or, you know, maybe just needs needs to have their homework reduced and modified in a way that they're still learning, but they can not be overwhelmed, you know, with the organizational tasks that are required. Or they need extra time for, let's say, the SATs or ACTs if they're in high school, or they need a separate room. They need to be allowed to have a quiet space, maybe with headphones on. You know, all of these are things that I think if schools have in place for children then can learn how to be their best advocates. Hey, teacher, it's a little loud in here. Can I go to the other room to take this exam?
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah,
they can understand what their needs are. And like I said, they don't have to use them. But it also, if that is in paper, you know, and there's a paper trail, it's so much easier than to have those same accommodations offered for children when they're in high school and the quote stakes are a little higher. And even as they move on to college, many colleges now, I've been amazed, you know, as my patients with ADHD go, and you know, they have this IEP in school and it just carries forward, and they're given all the same accommodations in college. So it's, you know, as we move forward, right? Now what's the con, right? What is the con? I think one of the cons is for parents and children to have a difficult time distinguishing what is the, you know, sort of can't do part of their brain that's more challenging and the won't do, right? And kind of tease out, you know, how much do I push my child? How much do I push myself? And not let ADHD be an excuse.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like it, because that I have had some kids and some parents say, well, they have ADHD, so, you know, they don't need to do this, do this, or I can do this for them. And it doesn't serve your child. It's just like, you know, having a child with asthma. Okay, you have a child with asthma in front of you. They're not an asthmatic kid. They're a child who has asthma, right? And they can be amazing athletes, right? They can they can run fast and they can, you know, have all of and really use their lungs to full capacity with the right training, right? Yeah. With the right support. Same thing with your child with ADHD. They're not an ADD kid, right? They are a kid who has ADD. And so how do we support them so that they can optimize how their brain is working and make their brain work for them and keep pushing and keep having that growth mindset, not just a mindset that, well, I have ADHD, so of course I'm not going to be able to succeed in school.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way of putting it, just to, you know, for that not to become an excuse for parents to have to overly push. And a lot of times we'll hear that, and it probably comes from a place of care, and just, but then you don't want to overdo that, to almost, you know, make it something that kids are hampered with. But yeah. when kids are coming to you, what is your integrative approach when you look at kids with ADHD?
So the foundation of how I approach kids with any chronic illness is really to start with a functional medicine approach. And in functional medicine acknowledges that all health starts in the gut, even if, and all disease starts in the gut. So even if your child has zero gut complaints, I always start looking at the gut, because the gut, unfortunately, is one thing that, you know, I can't tell what's going on in their gut until we look, right? So even if they don't have constipation or diarrhea or tummy aches or reflux, now sometimes they do, right? Yeah. But even if they don't, now why is that? We already, you know, we've already briefly touched upon the importance of the gut microbiome. But, you know, what's fascinating is that there is one study that looked at giving probiotics to babies from birth to 6 months of life. And when they were, those children, small study, but when those children were followed on in teenage years, they had a significantly reduced risk of ADHD and autism. Even as teenagers, with you know, and they didn't control for other variables, but that was the single, you know, biggest impact. So the gut microbiome makes a difference, because as the gut microbiome is developing, it communicates with the brain via something called the vagus nerve and informs the brain how to make those connections and keep those awesome connections that we want. And then the brain also communicates back with the gut. And so our gut microbiome is responsible for making the vast majority, maybe 90% of our neurotransmitters. And we have a lot of neurotransmitters, you know, all of those brain chemicals, they're all involved, you know, with feeling good and staying focused. When we think about ADD, the primary neurotransmitters that we're really focusing on, the primary one is dopamine. Many have heard of dopamine. Dopamine is our reward, focus, attention. It keeps us motivated. It keeps us on task. It's also responsible when we don't have enough dopamine and we're really seeking those dopamine surges. It can be responsible for addictive behaviors, which is why for a lot of kids with ADD, they may have more risks for addiction to sugar and video games and, you know, addictions later on in life. But we also can't forget about serotonin, which is our, you know, calm and feel good, manage stress neurotransmitter. It also is the precursor to melatonin, which is our sleep hormone. And a lot of kids with ADD, trouble sleeping, and also have, you know, have comorbid anxiety, right? Very, very common for kids with ADD to have anxiety. And so we want, and you know, what comes first? You know, what is it, a chicken or the egg kind of thing? Are they anxious because they can't focus and attend, right? Or are they, can they not focus and attend because they have so much anxiety, right?
Yeah.
So looking at the gut is really key. And when kids have something called gut dysbiosis or abnormal balance in their gut microbiome, if we can balance those, makes a huge difference, because we get back in those good bacteria, and bacteria that are called, quote, psychobiotics, because they're the ones specifically that enhance healthy levels of neurotransmitters. So that's primary. And also looking at something called leaky gut, which many of your listeners probably are familiar with, but leaky gut can be the result of gut dysbiosis. Abnormal bacteria in the gut can also happen on its own for a variety of reasons, including, unfortunately, gluten and casein, proteins found in wheat and cow's milk products, can directly trigger leaky gut. So can pesticides, so can psychological stress, right? Yeah. And so healing and sealing the leaks between the gut lining and reducing what are called food sensitivities can make a profound impact on your child's ADHD brain symptoms.
Yeah. And I think focusing, like you said, focusing on the gut comes with like a whole array of things. And I'm sure like you focus a lot on food and just your environment, like you said, stress, a lot of these things. How important is the role of our environment in ADHD?
Well, environment is key, right? You know, there are, and I guess, you know, how would we think about environment? You know, I think when I think of environment, I think of, you know, what are the toxic exposures? And toxic is a big word, but, you know, what are the exposures that are really harming, you know, our child's gut and brain, brain's ability to, you know, have optimal health. And so, you know, there are some environmental toxins like glyphosate, pesticides, right, that directly cause leaky gut and can actually kill beneficial bacteria and lead to gut disruption. We also know, just in terms of you know, our processed food, right, the ultra processed world we live in, we can choose healthier processed foods, and the foods that we want to avoid are the foods with artificial dyes and preservatives and flavors in them, because those we know can be directly contributory to attention and behavioral problems in the vast majority of not just kids with ADHD, but neurotypical kids. So, you know, swapping out your, you know, your fiery hot Takis, right, for like, let's say Trader Joe's roll tortillas that have chili powder on them, but nothing, are not the red dye 40 that is so toxic to your brain. Yeah. And then really thinking about how do we nourish our children's brain with the right ingredients too. And those are going to be, you know, really focusing on healthy fats. Our brain, 60% of our brain is fat. So we want to get, you know, healthy fats into our brain. We want to make sure that we're addressing the most common nutritional deficiencies found in kids, right, which are zinc and magnesium and iron. So many different things we can do. I know it sounds really overwhelming, but this is to say for mamas listening, we have so many action items that you can take to up-level your kids' health and really help their brains work for them. And so, you know, just so not to be overwhelmed, but just take one step at a time.
Yeah, I couldn't have said that any better. You know, just motivating parents that there's a lot that they can do, right? There is just connecting with a practitioner like you, where, you know, they can get an understanding of just a detailed way of how to help their kids, but also one that helps the whole family, right, at the same time. Where can parents find you? Because I know you've got so much information and it's so helpful. So where can they find you?
So the best way to find me is on healthykidshappykids.com. That's my educational blog site. And also following me on Instagram. I try to post really valuable information. So on Instagram, it's at healthykids_happykids. And you can find me on Facebook as well. And I want to point to, you know, Momina's work, because, you know, even if you don't have a pediatrician who's on the same page, just really working on nutrition and diet, I will tell you, the biggest bang for the buck is going to be, you know, working on getting rid of those inflammatory foods and really getting in those nourishing foods.
Yeah. No, thank you for that. And I'm so grateful that you were able to come today and talk to us and just literally tell us so many valuable things I think the parents can use to just start off, right? And help their kids. So thank you so much for coming.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation today. Thank you for listening to this podcast and spending your precious time with us at Helping Children Thrive. If you find this podcast helpful, please share it with your family, friends, and others who may benefit. If you haven't already, hit subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Please take a few moments to rate and review this podcast on the review section of Apple Podcasts. This will help other parents, caregivers, and professionals find the show more easily. Visit MominaSaleemCoaching.com to post comments on today's show or ask any questions about upcoming episodes. And sign up to receive a weekly update. Helping Children Thrive is not a substitute
for working with a qualified healthcare professional. The information shared here is not intended to diagnose and treat your child. Before implementing anything discussed here on the podcast, make sure to consult your healthcare practitioner. See you all next week.